Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
We don't want them.
The Trump administration is considering adding dozens more countries to the current travel ban list. The state has a new budget in place that includes millions of dollars in new taxes and one-time revenues. And Chicago police officers have shot and killed the same number of people so far this year as they did in all of last year. We dig into that data. And what does vaccine guidance look like going forward now that the health secretary has dismissed members of a key vaccine advisory panel? And now to some of today's top stories. The state's $55 billion budget is now law. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed the budget touting the limited spending despite a challenging fiscal season.
The budget maintains core investments for Illinois' families without raising their taxes. In a year when revenues are expected to increase by 3.5%, we reined in our discretionary spending to a less than 1% increase.
Pritzker criticized the Trump administration for sowing fiscal uncertainty, but praised lawmakers for passing a budget that still meets pension obligations and includes investments in education and early childhood learning. House Republican leader Tony McCombie, though, says the use of one-time revenue sweeps and nearly $1 billion in tax hikes sets the state up for failure in fiscal year 27. If you're heading downtown over the next few weeks, check your route. Street closures to prepare for the third annual NASCAR Chicago Street Race are starting. Beginning today, Balbo Drive between Columbus and DuSable Lakeshore Drive will be fully closed, with parking restrictions also in place on Columbus Drive between Jackson and Balbo. More closures start next week and will continue in the lead-up to the race on July 5th and 6th. Businesses and residences will still be accessible the entire time, but be sure you know how you're getting there. And it's the restaurant industry's biggest night. The James Beard Awards, often referred to as the Oscars of the food world, are taking place in Chicago tonight. But we already know one of the honorees, Chicago's beloved rib joint, Lim's Barbecue. The Southside staple was named one of America's classics by the James Beard Foundation back in February. The coveted category honors locally owned restaurants with timeless appeal that serve quality food and are beloved by their communities. We spoke with some local fans of the 70-year institution while they were lined up outside to hear what makes Lim's special.
I've been coming here since I was 9, and my sister had to have been 6 or 7. They're a black-owned establishment that's been in existence 71 years, and that speaks volumes.
Still the same old Lim, same old line, everything, and same good food. I like the rib tips, I like the hot links, I like everything they cook.
We smelled it first. When you drive by down the street, you can always smell it first, and when you see the smoke coming, you can tell it's here. So you can always got to stop by and see the line. It must be doing pretty good.
Congrats to Lim's. Looks delicious. 5 Chicago restaurants are up for awards tonight. Kumiko for Outstanding Bar, Galit for Outstanding Restaurant, and 3 finalists for Best Chef Great Lakes: Tai Deng of Jesus, Chris Young and Erling Wu Bauer of Maxwell's Trading, and Noah Sandoval of Oriole. Best of luck to them. Up next, what's behind an increase in Chicago police shootings more than 6 years after court-ordered reforms?
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jin and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago police officers shot 12 people and killed 6 during the first 5 months of this year. That's the same number of people officers shot and killed in all of 2024, according to an analysis of city data by WTTW News. Reporter Heather Sharone joins us now with more. Heather, break down this increase in police shootings for us.
So of the 12 people shot and 6 people killed between January 1st and May 31st, the same amount as in all of 2024, 6 people were shot by police officers in the month of May alone. 2 were killed. All but two of these shootings since the first of the year took place on the South and the West Side. Four involved people that police said were armed with knives. Three of the shootings followed foot chases, which are among the most dangerous interactions police officers and members of the public have. And on June 5th, Officer Crystal Rivera became the seventh person to be shot and killed by a Chicago police officer. Officials say her partner unintentionally shot her after a foot chase.
Heather, what do we know about whether these other shootings were justified?
All of the shootings remain under investigation by the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, and it is likely that it will take months, if not most of the next year, for COPA to figure out whether these shootings complied with departmental use of force policy.
Do police officials or Mayor Brandon Johnson, do any of them have an explanation for this increase in the number of shootings?
So Superintendent Larry Snelling, representatives of the police department, declined to answer questions that I sent to them. Mayor Brandon Johnson said that there's no evidence that these shootings are evidence that the ongoing reform effort is ineffective or impractical.
Okay. And so more than 6 years ago, those city and police leaders, they agreed to this extensive oversight from a federal judge in an effort to prevent deadly encounters between police and members of the public. You spoke with police reform advocates. Are they concerned by this increase?
They are. At the heart of the consent decree, which of course is supposed to change the way officers are trained, supervised, and disciplined, was the goal of making these interactions between police officers and residents of Chicagoans less deadly. Alexandra Block of the ACLU, which was one of the groups that sued the city to force the city to enter into consent decree, says the CPD owes the city an explanation for these shootings. And she says they will continue demanding those answers as part of the consent decree ongoing process.
Okay. Heather Sharone, steady on the case for us. Thank you, Heather.
Thanks, Brandis.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It is all at WTTW.com/news. The Trump administration is reportedly considering a large-scale expansion to its travel ban. A memo from the State Department reveals 36 additional countries, most of them African or majority black nations, could soon face full or partial entry restrictions. This is in addition to 12 countries the administration already banned earlier this month. The news has sparked outrage from local immigrant rights groups saying the policy, quote, endangers lives, fuels anti-black and anti-immigrant sentiment, and dishonors the contributions of Haitian and African immigrants. Joining us to discuss more are Etzer Kantav, president of the DuSable Heritage Association, and Alejandra Palacios, staff attorney at the University of Illinois Chicago's International Human Rights Clinic. Thanks to you both for joining us. So earlier this month, we know President Donald Trump, he announced the travel restrictions on 12 nations. Yesterday, we learned, via the Washington Post reporting, really, that 36 more countries could join that list. And as I mentioned, most of them majority black, as you can see by the map. Many of them are in Africa. Etzer Kantav, what is your reaction to this news?
So thank you, Brenda, for having me. First, I need to make a rectification. I'm the past president of DuSable Heritage Association. But I'm also a member, the chair of the coalition of Haitian American organizations. Okay, well, so this is something, you know, that doesn't sit well with us because we don't know that Haiti is an enemy of the U.S. We don't know that that Haiti has had any kind of enmity against the U.S. In fact, Haiti is one of the surest allies of the U.S. in the international community. So we always vote in lockstep with the U.S. So we don't understand where that's coming from. And then to put this in context, this is at the same time that the administration is rolling out the red carpet for white Africaners, you know, and then
South Africa,
supposedly that they are being harassed, that they are being subject to a genocide. And then at the same time, so they are doing this against the African countries. I don't know what kind of threat, security threat, we are posing to the U.S. I mean, we don't have any kind of weaponry, I mean, to cross the Atlantic, you know, to hit, a U.S. city.
To violently strike the United States.
I don't know how it could be.
Well, you know, we mentioned the press release from the Coalition of Haitian American Organizations in the Chicagoland area, United African Organization. They are calling the policy anti-black. In your view, are the countries that are selected for these travel bans, is this blatantly racist?
Well, I just made the contrast with the red carpet that they rolled out. Exactly. So it is something that's, you know, that we should put in context of the replacement theory. This is that. Is this what's at play? That, I mean, there is some, you know, some unease when we see that the browning of the American country. So is that something that really, that causes, I mean, some people, some sectors to be frightful. So, as I said, so there is no rhyme or reason. I think that the, I mean, everything that's when is, you know, is ludicrous.
So the countries outlined in the cable, they cite that, or the concerns outlined in the cable, I should say, cite these countries' apparent lack of identity documents and the questionable security of those countries' passports. It also mentions that some of the countries lack cooperation to facilitate the removal of their nationals who have overstayed their visas in the U.S. Alejandra, are these valid national security concerns?
So according to the Trump administration, they are. And as we understand, given the history of how the courts have also received a lot of the policies that have come down from the Trump administration, he has broad powers to control immigration law. And so he is justifying these actions through the need for increased national security. But what's interesting and what I would like to point out is that the countries that are named in this travel ban, right, none of these countries, except for, I believe, Iran, are listed on the United States terrorist list. And so there seems to be some confusion there. But we do see this impacting U.S. citizens. We do see this impact. We do see justifications on the basis of national security and on this idea that these countries are not accepting individuals who have been deported, and that these countries lack appropriate screening and vetting procedures that then could result in some kind of danger to U.S. citizens. But, you know, even thinking about how President Trump tried to conflate the attack in Colorado as a reason to justify this travel ban, that individual was an Egyptian national, and Egypt is not on the list. Right, and so there doesn't seem to be a lot of rhyme or reason behind some of these policies.
How do you think this one differs from the travel ban in Trump's first administration? We know that was majority Muslim nations then.
Yes, and so during the first administration, what we saw is a lot more chaos, a lot of short notice, and a lot of racist rhetoric around this, around the travel bans. I mean, it was called the Muslim travel ban for a reason. Trump made openly racist remarks about how he was targeting Muslim countries. And so that caused a lot of public disruption. Individuals were arriving at airports and not being allowed to enter, right? And from one day to the next. This new travel ban has a lot more legal precision. It is broader. It has specific exemptions and waiver options as well. And so I believe that the Trump administration has learned from the litigation that occurred during the first administration to now overcome those legal hurdles that they faced during the first rounds of litigation related to this issue. And this new Muslim ban, or this new travel ban, excuse me, does not single out Muslim countries, but rather it is a more extensive list. And the administration has also made remarks about how this list was created also because the governments of those nations are not receiving their nationals back, or there's, you know, just not the best relationship with those countries.
Yeah, and reports show that the governments of those listed nations, they've been given 60 days to meet new benchmarks and requirements established by the U.S. State Department, and a deadline of 8 a.m. on Wednesday to say, hey, this is the initial action plan that we've come up with to meet that. Of course, the White House has not necessarily responded or confirmed any of this just yet. Etzer, this, you know, of course, this all comes on the heels of, you know, the mass deportations and the detainments of pro-Palestinian students that we've been seeing. Do you think this travel ban is part of greater anti-immigrant sentiment?
Oh, yes. So definitely. Definitely. And then this is yet, well, as far as Haiti is concerned, this is yet another affront to the Haitian people. So we know that back in the fall, the egregious comments that were made about Haitians. So, you know, so that in is an appendix, you know, to all that sentiment against immigration, against a certain type of immigration. As I said before, okay, some of the ones are welcome, but for us. Some of the African countries, I mean, Sierra Leone, or
Like there are some that are not so welcome, and that, like you said, like the administration seems to be picking and choosing. But I'll be curious to see what the State Department and/or the White House says on the record right now. We know that this is based on Washington Post reporting. We'll have to leave it there for now. If this continues, we'll have you back, of course, Etzer Kantav and Alejandro Palacios. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Up next, changes to a vaccine advisory panel are raising concerns over public health. Illinois health officials are calling out the Trump administration's move to oust members of a vaccine advisory panel. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. recently dismissed all 17 members of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and named 8 new vaccine policy advisors to replace them. Kennedy insists the move was necessary to, quote, reestablish public confidence in vaccine science. However, some public health officials are calling the move deeply concerning. Joining us now on what it could mean for vaccine guidance going forward are Dr. Tina Tan, professor of pediatrics and infectious diseases at Northwestern's School of Medicine and physician at Lurie Children's Hospital, and on Zoom, Dr. Samir Vora, director of the Illinois Department of Public Health. Thanks to you both for joining us. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Dr. Tan, first to you, remind us what the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices does.
So ACIP is a committee of highly vetted experts on vaccines, infectious diseases, and they're in all different fields. And what they do is they very carefully review all the scientific information on the vaccines, and they put together sound recommendations for the use of the vaccines in persons of all ages.
What are some of their backgrounds, the mix of you know, professional disciplines that makes up a good panel?
So it's a panel made up of people that are infectious diseases, pediatrics, family practice, OBGYNs, public health, epidemiologists, researchers. So it's a very, very diverse panel, which basically looks at all the scientific data from all the different angles to come up with the most sound recommendations for the use of the vaccines.
Dr. Vora, we know Secretary Kennedy, he got through his Senate confirmation with a vote from Republican Senator Bill Cassidy because Cassidy said that Kennedy promised that he would, quote, not mess around with vaccines too much. Will these new members that he has appointed to this, will they have the power to affect vaccine policy?
Well, as Dr. Tan mentioned, right, the rigorous process in which members of ACIP are chosen. And ACIP, as currently constituted, often set important recommendations in which practitioners like Dr. Tan and I had used to make and recommend vaccine guidance to our patients. Also, a number of states use ACIP guidance and are mentioned in state law. And those things were done, and often states and local jurisdictions respected the ACIP process based on the credibility and the nonpartisan way in which those recommendations were made. The decisions by the secretary now put that trust and credibility at risk, which is why it has been concerning to many states, including us here in Illinois, as well as national, state, and local leaders, specialty societies, and other individuals that depended on ACIP guidance for decision making.
Dr. Tan, RFK Jr., the secretary, he has retired all 17 members, replaced them with 8 new members, as we mentioned. Is that enough? Can 8 do the job of 17? And is that enough of the diversity that we were talking about earlier?
So it's not the number that makes a difference. It's the expertise. And the 8 members that RFK basically chose are not experts. Many of them are vaccine skeptics. Some of them are anti-vaccine and anti-science, and some of them are not even in the medical field.
What does that make you think as a practitioner? What
so
are your concerns?
As a practitioner, it's going to be very difficult for that group to put out scientifically sound recommendations for the use of vaccines in all age groups.
So ACIP's recommendations also determine which vaccines get covered by the Vaccines for Children program. That's
correct.
A federally funded initiative, provides free access to low-income and underinsured children. Who will be most impacted by this move, Dr. Tan?
So basically, here in the United States, we have been very fortunate in the past that VFC basically uses the exact same vaccines that children whose parents have insurance use. Now, if there is an impact on VFC, there's going to be a problem with regards to access to the vaccines, so that, you know, kids that are on Medicaid or who don't have insurance are going to find it very difficult to get vaccines if the VFC program basically suffers from this.
Dr. Vora, what about those of us who do have insurance? Will our insurance companies continue to cover if we would like to get vaccines? Will they pay for it?
I think part of what has been created is a lot of uncertainty from the secretary's recommendations. And as we've seen kind of changing recommendations around COVID-19, it's unclear where those ACIP recommendations will be and how insurance companies will follow. And it places a situation where, as we look at this, we don't know what the landscape will look like, and we'll all be waiting. And I think it really puts both the residents that we serve here in Illinois, providers, but also how the medical and healthcare system works in a cloud of uncertainty that is really causing concern throughout the nation.
Dr. Vora, we've got about 45 seconds left. How is IDPH responding to these changes to ensure that you all and practitioners have sound information to guide patients with?
Well, we're definitely not standing still. Part of our great mission here at the Illinois Department of Public Health is to ensure that credible processes, founded on up-to-date scientific evidence are being followed, and our recommendations follow that as well. We're working to make sure that we're analyzing Illinois-specific data. We're convening independent experts like Dr. Tan and her colleagues here in Illinois to have robust conversations, and including with our Immunization Advisory Committee, to ensure that residents know that here at the Illinois Department of Public Health, we are a credible source so that individuals can get the information that they need.
I'm sure the work continues. That's what we'll have to leave it. Dr. Tina Tan, Dr. Samir Vora, thanks to you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this Monday night. You can stream Chicago Tonight on our WTTW YouTube channel every evening and catch up on any programs you may have missed. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Outgoing Chicago Public Schools leader Pedro Martinez joins us for an exit interview. And we leave you tonight with the city's flag-raising ceremony in Daley Plaza for Juneteenth. The federal holiday is this Thursday. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.